I'm William O'Flaherty. Welcome to another special edition of All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm the author of C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell, a companion and study guide to the Screwtape Letters. And typically I host this show, but it's the sixth and final episode of Exploring C.S. Lewis Misquotes and Misconceptions, and as with the other programs in this series, I have a guest host taking over shortly. If you haven't heard the other shows, then please consider listening to them, and that'll help you gain a greater understanding of the topic. Joining me to guest host is Dr. Crystal Hurd. She had hosting duties in the debut episode. Welcome back to All About Jack, Crystal.
Pleasure to be here, William.
Well, Crystal, to start things off, how about sharing a little bit about yourself before leading into the main content?
Yeah, I currently have a blog with Lewis-related articles at crystalhurd.com, and I'm also the author of 30 Days with C.S. Lewis, a women's devotional, as well as some other related articles about Lewis and women, Lewis and leadership, and on Albert Lewis. This is just a reminder that this episode of All About Jack is sponsored by Shelley and Son Books, and you can find Shelley and Son Books online at shelleyandsonbooks.com. That's spelled S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. As William stated, this is the final episode of Exploring C.S. Lewis Misquotes and Misconceptions. If you've heard the last program, then you know the topic was misconceptions about Lewis and that two issues were discussed. In a moment, we'll be addressing one more misunderstanding about Lewis, and then do a quick summary of what was done in earlier episodes. As William already encouraged you, please listen to those other shows to hear more details than we will be sharing today. Also, visit his website, EssentialCSLewis.com, to read the related articles that go into even more detail. So, William, the only additional misconception we will explore is this: the claim that C.S. Lewis was a universalist. First, why do people even think this?
Well, specifically, there are three main reasons some believe Lewis held a universalist position. The first has to do with the Emeth character from The Last Battle, the final Narnia story. A second common factor for thinking he believed in universalism is his praise of George MacDonald, who was a proponent of at least some type of universal salvation. Finally, another concern expressed by some is because of comments Lewis made related to salvation in Mere Christianity, as well as other writings.
That's very true, William. I've actually heard several people mention the possibilities of Lewis's universalist, quote-unquote, universalist position, especially in regards to Emeth and in regards to George MacDonald, which he called one of his masters. So can we talk about those in more detail?
All right, well, I want to look at just a couple of them, and let's first look at the Narnia connection. So Emeth, again, is a character from The Last Battle, the final Narnia story. Obviously, this is a work of fiction, so, you know, basing an author's beliefs from a story, is a shaky ground to begin with. Yet valid objections can be raised from the picture Lewis does paint. So Emeth, for those who aren't familiar, is a Calormene soldier whose race is known for worshipping Tash, who is a false god who is very cruel. It is clear in the story that he served Tash before he died, and yet, when he speaks with Aslan after he dies, he discovers that anything he did that was good in the name of his false god, Tash, was accepted as service to Aslan. Therefore, Emeth gets to go to the equivalent of heaven in Narnia. So for many, this means that Lewis believed all go to heaven. So that's the Narnia connection.
It's interesting, William, that you mentioned the fiction, although there's a strong spiritual element to Lewis's fiction. Again, it is fiction, so certainly he can play with some of those elements, and we can't take everything as exactly what Lewis had believed, right? So that's a great point. How about the concern with what Lewis has written about his nonfiction? Now, in your article already posted online, people can read about what he stated in some letters, but what did he say in Mere Christianity that is of concern for some folks?
All right, well, there's two key passages in Mere Christianity that I'm familiar with that are found in the 10th chapter of Book 4, Beyond Personality, the name of that Book 4. The 10th chapter is called Nice People Are New Men. So it's in this chapter Lewis addressed the question of why some non-Christians are nicer than Christians. He then stated the obvious that when Christians, quote, behave badly or fail to behave well, close quote, that they make, quote, Christianity unbelievable to the outside world, end quote. But then after this, he explained why it was irrational to think one could simply label an individual either a Christian or not just by how nice they are. Here is where one should be careful to not miss the context of what is said overall. Lewis wrote that he thought some, quote, who do not accept the full Christian doctrine about Christ, close quote, could still be, quote, so strongly attracted by him that they are his, and I'm ending Lewis's quote, more than they realize. This passage alone would merely suggest that there are those who have not yet accepted Christ but are on their way to in doing so, which was definitely the case in Lewis's life. He took a long time. But now, Lewis didn't stop there. In the same chapter, in the next sentence, he then proclaims the following. I'm not going to break up the quotes. It'll flow a little bit better. He says, quote, there are people in other religions who are being led by God's secret influence to concentrate on those parts of their religion which are in agreement with Christianity and who thus belong to Christ without knowing it. Close quote.
Now, you give both of these so-called proofs that Lewis was a universalist, but tell us why they really aren't proofs, actually.
All right, well, they definitely, you know, are unusual things that you wouldn't, you know, expect most people to state, and maybe people who have even read Mere Christianity maybe didn't even notice that these words were there, because there's many other great things that can help someone grow spiritually. Well, what I want to point out is, you know, there's a book called Deeper Magic that came out in late 2016. Dr. Donald T. Williams wrote it, and he says, quote, traditional evangelicals are disturbed by Lewis's line of reasoning because they think it unbiblical and fear that if accepted, it might blunt the urgency of the task of world evangelism, end quote. Well, now, as disturbing as this is, it does not amount to labeling Lewis as a universalist. Instead, and Dr. Williams does go into detail in his book about this point and other things, this doesn't mean he was a universalist, but it merely means that Lewis believes, or at least hopes, a position called inclusivism is possible. What does this mean? Williams explains this belief, quote, holds that not all men are saved, that those who are saved by the death of Christ, but that it is possible for some who have never heard the name of Jesus to be saved by that death through implicit faith by following the light that they had, close quote. So taking this understanding and recalling the events in The Last Battle, one realizes that not everyone in that story got to go to Narnia's version of heaven. One, Susan, who was once a queen in Narnia, didn't get to go. But then she technically didn't die in that story either. And then, you know, you have to be sure to read that or review it if you're not familiar. But anyway, so Emmeth, unlike many of the other people of his race, he did get to go to heaven, but there are many who didn't. Like Shift, the ape, didn't get to go, among others. So thus, if one is looking for proof that Lewis was a universalist from the final Narnia tale, as well as Mere Christianity, one would have to overlook these facts.
Again, if you'd like more details about all the stuff that William is mentioning, you can go online to his website, EssentialCSLewis.com, for additional information. That includes links to other material and where he will explain in more detail the things he's mentioning here. There'll also be a link in the show notes to direct you to it. Now let's review the material covered in earlier shows. Back in the second episode, you told us about the following quote and sort of summarized and explained to us why it's not Lewis. And this quote is, I pray because I can't help myself. I pray because I'm helpless. I pray because the need flows out of me all the time, waking and sleeping. It doesn't change God. It changes me. Now that sounds nice, but it's not Lewis, right?
Correct. This quote does say a lot of nice things, but it doesn't take away from the fact that Lewis never said it. In the movie Shadowlands, the fictional C.S. Lewis, played by Anthony Hopkins, he did say it, but that still doesn't mean that the real Lewis said it. So it's not reasonable to say that he made the statement that is the real C.S. Lewis when it's clear that it's a line from a movie.
Very good. Very good. Now here's another one for you. Humility is not thinking less of yourself, it's thinking of yourself less.
This is another great quote, and one can enjoy it, but it's just know that Lewis didn't say it. Now, it does sound like something he would say. In fact, I suspect the person who actually wrote it might have been thinking of Lewis because it is, you know, it seems to be a great paraphrase of ideas found in one of his books. However, the real author of the quote is Rick Warren. He first wrote the saying in his 2002 book entitled The Purpose-Driven Life. It is found on day 19 in a chapter entitled Cultivating Community. Yet, Warren doesn't give any mention of Lewis before or after these words, and this book already mentions Lewis several times in other places. So it would be odd for him to mention Lewis other times, but then not mention it in this chapter if he was wanting to, you know, quote Lewis or reference Lewis. Again, I'm thinking he might have been because it's so similar, but it is Rick Warren's own word, so we need to give him credit for it.
That's interesting. I wonder if Warren feels flattered that people think that Lewis plagiarized him. Now, you're very familiar with the Screwtape Letters, with C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell being a great companion and guide through that work. And this next one's kind of lengthy, and this is only a part of it. My dear Wormwood, be sure that the patient remains completely fixated on politics. Arguments, political gossip, and obsessing on the faults of people they have never met serves as an excellent distraction from advancing in personal virtue, character, and the things that the patient can control. Now, William, I've seen this a lot lately online, so can we dispel this myth right now and get that out?
Well, actually, I'm only going to say that it's not Lewis for the sake of time, since we are reviewing, so we want to encourage people to go back. We did introduce it back in the first show, but it's also one that gone into more detail in the other show, so they can get those details there. So be sure to check out that second podcast episode that we have. You can go into the show notes to be able to follow back into that. As well as if you go on to my website that you've already been so kind to mention, essentialcslewis.com, there'll be a link in the show notes that you can directly read the article that I did, and some other people have written about those as well. But yeah, it's been coming up again and again here. But well, let me also just mention briefly that in addition to the enhanced study guide on the Screwtape Letters, I also have done some short podcasts called 200 Seconds in Hell with C.S. Lewis that highlights content from his book. And so links to the book and that series are also in the show notes. We want to, you know, obviously encourage people to read the Screwtape Letters directly. That's how you can really know that it's not from the Screwtape Letters. If you are familiar with it enough, then you'll know when somebody is really just trying to do a homage, so to speak, of the letters. But whoever did it didn't do a good job to note that. I guess they didn't want to take credit for it. But then they've inadvertently made people think that it was from the Screwtape Letters.
Well, that's a very Screwtapian thing to do, isn't it? Well, let's take a look at another one. Children are not a distraction from more important work. They are the most important work.
Yeah, this was dealt with in the third episode. This is one of those quotes that I was able to track down who actually wrote the expression. It's still a mystery, though, as to how Lewis's name was associated to the saying. The real author is Dr. John Traynor. I found some references online that gave him credit for the quote, and that led me to tracking him down on Facebook a couple of years ago. He provided proof to me that he came up with the expression, but sadly that hasn't stopped others from sharing the quote, which, you know, is a good one, and falsely attributing it to Lewis.
Another plagiarized statement, right? Lewis plagiarizing others. Yeah, that's good. This is another one, and I mentioned in the first show that when my husband graduated from graduate school this past fall, one of the speakers actually gave this quote and attributed it to Lewis. It's very heavy out in our culture, but it's, you're never too old to set another goal or dream a new dream. So can you talk about this just a little bit? Because it's so prevalent out in culture right now.
Well, actually, Crystal, I'm going to be a little dodgy here and somewhat skip over this one, other than saying that we know that Lewis didn't write it. And I share more about it in the third podcast details that tell you who did this quote. And so you can check that podcast. And then at the time of this recording, I also have the details online at essentialcslewis.com.
That's great, William. And we'll make sure to check out the website and read up on the information that you've posted, which is great information on a lot of these quotes. So let's try another one. Be weird, be random, be who you are, because you never know who would love the person you hide.
Yeah, this is a quote that I first posted about on my site near the end of 2016. I had been aware of it before then, but just wasn't able to locate who actually said it. And I'd already searched all the digital copies of Lewis's works to confirm that he didn't write it. But then, you know, finally, I settled on the fact that a 2014 book that people can look on my website or listen to one of the other shows that talks about it did mention it. And I did a search through Google Books that people can also try as well. And it said that this quote was anonymous or an unknown author. So that's the verdict. It's not Lewis. Some unknown author wrote it.
Now, the next set of quotations comes from the fourth podcast where you presented sayings that you have labeled either almost or not quite Lewis. Now, for the sake of time, let's group the three main ones that you covered into one discussion, but first start out with having you again explain what you mean by these categories and why you came up with them.
Well, the shortened version of why I created the categories is I needed some way of sorting through all the quotes, and I noticed a pattern of different types of misquotes. This resulted in me coming up with the names for them. The system's not perfect, but basic ones are not Lewis. And then the other category, the second one, I categorize as almost Lewis quotes. I found that there were some expressions that were close to what he actually said. It's either a paraphrase of him or a quotation that has some words missing, or maybe they've added some extra words. Then for the not quite Lewis quotes, these are sayings that Lewis did write, but there are context issues with them. For some, when the expression is so isolated, the meaning is potentially very different from what Lewis meant, so it could be misunderstood. And then there's actually one that the context reveals that Lewis is actually disagreeing with the statement.
Wow, yeah, that's very important. Context is everything, yeah. So for the fourth show, you covered the three main quotations. So one, I believe in Christ like I believe in the sun, not because I can see it, but by it I can see everything else. The second one, there are far, far better things ahead than any we leave behind. And the third one, the homemaker has the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support the ultimate career. Now, briefly then, tell us something about them, and the listener can get more details from listening to episode number 4 of this series, and then follow the links in the show notes to uncover more details. But if you could, just sort of briefly tell us here how they're not quite Lewis.
All right, so yeah, let me break them down. Yeah, all these are actually almost quotes, but the middle one about better things is also a not quite Lewis because of context issues. So I've grouped these together, but in the material online, there's more, and we could go into more details, but there's fewer of these than there are of the not quotes. But so the first one again is, I believe in Christ like I believe in the sun, not because I can see it, but by it I can see everything else. Now, this is actually close to what Lewis said, but what he wrote is different in several ways. I'll only mention one, and the listener can. I know this is maybe a broken record here, but they can go back over and listen to the fourth program or read the article online at EssentialCSLewis.com. So the first difference is at the start. Lewis uses the word Christianity and not Christ. And so that is just one. I believe in the other episode, I don't have my notes in front of me. I think there are like actually 8 word differences in addition to punctuation. So this, you know, the expression that's falsely attributed to Lewis is not bad at all, but he said it differently, so we want to be accurate. And this quote is actually the real one, is from the essay Is Theology Poetry, which I didn't actually read the quote. People have to go online or read the essay Is Theology Poetry, and it's best found in the essay collection The Weight of Glory. Now let me repeat the next quote. This was, there are far, far better things ahead than any we leave behind. This quotation is one that suffers from 2 different problems, which I'll take in reverse order. While Lewis wrote something very close to this, I believe his meaning suffers when even his actual words are shared without their context. The initial problem of not being exactly what Lewis wrote is easily resolved by noting that only 2 extra words are contained in the questionable version. So in this case, I'll give you the real version. It's simply, there are better things ahead than any we leave behind. Now, I discourage people from sharing this quotation because by itself, it's not clear what Lewis meant by it. That is, Lewis wasn't focusing on earthly matters like facing an unfamiliar situation like finishing school or beginning a new job. That's something that, you know, we want to encourage people, but that's not what Lewis was doing. And so you can find out by checking out that fourth show or read the post online that is available as the show is posted in 2017. Finally, then, the last quote, I'll say it again in a moment, but to learn everything about it, you'll need to listen to the earlier show or the article at EssentialCSLewis.com. That quote was, "The homemaker has the ultimate career. All other careers exist for one purpose only, and that is to support the ultimate career." Presently, I'm considering this as an almost quotation because Lewis did write something that stands alone pretty well that you can find about online, but as we're saying, that expression is not Lewis. He did write a letter to someone in 1955 that basically says the same thing, but we don't have time to talk about it in this wrap-up show.
Well, they can definitely check out online and podcast 4, correct, to get that information. So they can definitely check that out. Click that link after they finish the podcast. So finally, in the last program, you tackled a couple of misconceptions about Lewis, which is also a series on your website, EssentialCSLewis.com, that people can read about. And as you note online, some misunderstandings are more common than others. But if you want to make sure that people aren't confused about the life, beliefs, or writings of C.S. Lewis, it's most definitely, you know, great to inform yourself. One of the topics for the last episode that we also previewed in the first show had to do with someone named Mrs. Moore. Lots and lots and lots of stuff about Mrs. Moore. Now, who was she, and what's so controversial about her?
Well, first, let me mention that online I have over 1,500-word piece devoted to the topic, plus I received permission from Lewis scholar Dr. Jerry Root to share some parts of an unpublished paper that is in addition to the 1,500-plus words in my article. So the following is only introducing this topic that people can learn more about by listening to the last show or reading what is available on my site. Well, so basically, the facts are that Lewis lived with Mrs. Janie Moore for nearly half of his life, and she was a married woman. That's, you know, quite shocking for some people. Now, I believe in the debut episode, it was stated that she was divorced, but she actually wasn't, but just, you know, a brief clarification there. So who was she, and why did Lewis live with her? Well, she was the mother of a friend who Lewis met while training to serve in World War I. He promised to look after her if her son didn't survive the war, and he didn't. Well, now, the rumor is that Lewis and Mrs. Moore were secret lovers, or at least they were for some part of their lives. Biographer A.N. Wilson says the burden of proof lies on those who think he did not have an affair with her, but Dr. Jerry Root believes it is the other way around. So now, two important things to consider are this. One, you know, Lewis was not a Christian for about a dozen years during this relationship. And then second, it is clear that he enjoyed her company during that time. So, you know, in all honesty, I reluctantly admit that it is possible that something could have happened during those years. However, and this is mentioned in my material online and some in the last show, Lewis believed in applying his faith in all areas of his life. And an affair after this time, when he became a Christian, is extremely unlikely. Also, truthfully, an entire episode of, you know, over 30 minutes could easily be devoted to this topic, but, you know, for the sake of time, I'm going to need to end there.
Very good, William. That's a lot of great information. And it is true that Lewis did live with Miss Moore and her daughter Maureen for pretty much the rest of her life. But she does mention, even in volume one of the letters, he calls her to a correspondent, "My mother, please pray for my mother." So it's a really interesting relationship, isn't it? Kind of an interesting relationship. Certainly we could talk about it, but we don't have the time. So we can move on. So let's talk about another debate that we mentioned earlier. The other issue that you addressed had to do with the debate that Lewis had in the late 1940s. And it's been suggested that his faith was shaken to the point that he didn't write apologetic works anymore, that he shifted to fiction after this discussion, this debate he had. So what are the facts around this event?
Well, now my post online puts the questionable claim this way. Lewis had a serious crisis of faith after losing a debate to Anscombe. That's the last name of the lady that he debated. Now, that's there's not much truth about that statement. That's why I present it, because the series is about misconceptions. So that's a misconception. The first thing is to examine, you know, this debate, which happened in 1948. It's really not what most people think of as a debate. What I mean is this. For most people, a debate is what happens when political candidates are asked questions and someone moderates or asks, you know, the questions. So that's not what happened at this meeting, which was a part of the Oxford Socratic Club. Instead, a fellow Christian by the name of Elizabeth Anscombe was the scheduled guest to present a paper where she questions one of the points Lewis makes in his then recently released book entitled Miracles. Lewis responded to her remarks, and there was a back and forth exchange. While it's true that Lewis made comments after this meeting about not being happy about how he did in it, it's debatable as to who actually won the debate. Either way, there's some who say that he stopped defending the faith because of losing the debate. However, while it's true that all of his Narnia stories came out after this, and that he had no new books that defended the Christian faith, you can't say the two are directly related. Why? Well, now, Lewis had already been writing fiction that were creative expressions of his faith before this debate, and he still wrote about his faith after the debate. Sure, he didn't do it as directly as the majority of the books he penned prior to the debate, but it is more likely because he had done all he felt he could do from that angle.
That's a great point, William. There were a lot of great fiction works that explored Lewis's faith. For example, Pilgrim's Regress was published shortly after conversion in 1933. The Space Trilogy, all published, the final one in 1945. So there were quite a few books that Lewis had already been searching and working themes of faith through at that point. So certainly maybe he changed his game plan or rethought some new ways of putting his faith out there. But it doesn't seem like he was at all discouraged to write about his faith. And if anyone is interested, Joel Heck has published many of the papers from the Socratic Club in a publication called The Socratic Digest, which you can order and you can read those papers for yourself. Well, William, I'm sorry, but that's all the time we have to explore this information. This has been a great series, and it's good to get the real answer behind a lot of the things that are floating around on the internet. So, William, thank you again for having me as your guest host today.
Well, thank you for being willing to help me out with this six-part series, Crystal. And so let's have you wrap things up, and I'll come back, though, at the very end after your final comments here. And let's have you again go over some about who you are and maybe in a little bit more detail than you did at the beginning.
Well, sure. Well, thank you. Again, thank you for inviting me to be a part of this series. It's fantastic, and it's great to be on All About Jack. Again, I do some work on my own blog, which is crystalhurd.com. That's crystalhurd.com. And additionally, again, I've published a devotional, 30 Days with C.S. Lewis. And additionally, I contributed an essay on Flora Lewis, which is C.S. Lewis's mother, to the collection Women in C.S. Lewis. And I'm currently working on some research and have published a couple of articles on Albert Lewis, which is C.S. Lewis's father. And I'm exploring how his parents had ultimately influenced him, how he was sort of a perfect storm of genetic brilliance. And there's so much stuff to mine there. It's exciting. So additionally, I also work as review editor for Sehnsucht, the C.S. Lewis Journal. So just love Lewis and love all about Lewis. So feel free to check out my website or any articles as they come available.
I do hope you will consider checking out Crystal's website, especially if you have never been there. It's crystalhurd.com, and there is a direct link in the show notes to it. Well, as noted, I'm William O'Flaherty, and thank you again for listening to this episode of All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. As mentioned, this is the sixth and final program dealing with Lewis misquotes and misconceptions. Let me also remind you that this episode was sponsored by Shelley and Son Books. You can find Shelley and Son Books online at shelleyandsonbooks.com. Shelley is spelled S-H-E-L-L-E-Y. There'll be a direct link in the show notes for them as well, and you can find those notes at essentialcslewis.com and look for this show on Lewis misquotes and misconceptions. But you can also locate the show where the audio files are hosted at allaboutjack.podbean.com. Again, that's allaboutjack.podbean.com. Allow me to also point out that since I began this series, plans changed regarding my forthcoming book that is presently untitled. As of September 2017, I will just be doing a book on the quotations, and material related to misconceptions will be published at a date yet to be determined. The reason for this is because after further research, I was able to uncover more than enough content to just explore questionable quotations. The tentative release date for the misquotes book is May 2018. Finally, before ending, let me remind you that I do have a book already out, and it's an enhanced study guide to the Screwtape Letters. It's called C.S. Lewis Goes to Hell. You can learn more about the book by visiting ScrewtapeCompanion.com. There you can get an immediate download of a free 20-page PDF sample of the book. Again, that's ScrewtapeCompanion.com. Purchasing this book is a great way to support this free podcast. Once again, thank you for listening to All About Jack, a podcast feature of EssentialCSLewis.com. I'm William O'Flaherty.